It's Curious City,
where we take your questions
about Chicago and the region
and investigate,
report,
explore
from WBEZ.
Hey, Jessica Popovac here. A few weeks ago, we ran a story about early nuclear experiments at the University of Chicago during World War II and whether or not Chicago's mayor and government even knew they were happening.
We were not to reveal anything of what you do. Don't take up with strangers. If you're having a sandwich someplace or a beer or whatever, watch out that people who may engage you in conversation, they may actually be the enemy.
It reminded us that back in 2013, Curious City actually did a fascinating story about that same experiment. The question came from Chicago native Mark Eifert.
The first controlled nuclear reaction took place under University of Chicago's Stagg Field. And I'm wondering if that site is still radioactive.
For an answer, we turned to audio producer Katie Mingle.
Now, to really unpack this question, it's helpful to know the full backstory. And it's a good story. So let's start back at World War II. American scientists were running experiments to help win the war, and some of that work was done in Chicago. To help tell the story, I found a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian who wrote the book about this.
I'm Richard Rhodes.
As Rhodes tells it, in 1938, scientists in Nazi Germany had discovered that when they split a uranium atom, that atom would release neutrons. Those neutrons could go find more uranium atoms to split, which would release even more neutrons, and you'd have a chain reaction.
Once the discovery was made, it was very quickly clear to scientists that this new, extraordinarily energetic reaction made it possible to build atomic bombs.
Scientists knew that a chain reaction was possible in theory, but they'd never seen one. To get to the bomb, they'd need to experiment.
But this would be done in a slightly different way, and you could control it. It wouldn't all go boom at once. It would be something you could control.
Which gets us back to 1942 at the University of Chicago and an Italian physicist named Enrico Fermi. To demonstrate a chain reaction, Fermi would build a crude reactor. He called it a pile because that's what it was, a pile of graphite bricks with uranium pellets interspersed. Uranium provided the neutrons, and graphite slowed the reactions. Now, this is the part where Mark and other people might be wondering about radioactivity. Why run the experiment in the city and not out in the woods? Well, they tried, but workers went on strike at that location, so they moved the pile to the next best location, underground, on the university campus.
Squash courts. Double squash courts.
And as Rhodes explains, it wasn't actually that crazy, because they'd already been practicing in the squash courts with smaller piles.
The final full-scale machine was not starting from scratch. The odds of there being some totally different response out of these materials when they went the final step were very small. On the other hand, nature is full of surprises.
Rhodes says Fermi's team didn't think there'd be a surprise, as in an explosion. A worst-case scenario would have been something along the lines of a meltdown. Still, it couldn't have been an easy decision for Arthur Compton, who ran the research at the university.
Finally concluded that he could not tell the president of the University of Chicago what they were doing and ask his permission.
In November of 1942, permission or not, Fermi's team started on the final pile. The whole team, even the scientist, helped unload graphite from boxcars.
People got just covered with this graphite. Imagine a big block of pencil lead in your hands. They would go home looking as if they'd been working in a coal mine all day.
They worked in shifts day and night, putting down layers of graphite and plunking in uranium pellets. They were using natural uranium, which isn't very radioactive.
Natural uranium is something that you can handle with your bare hands.
So the pile is growing and taking shape.
It was the size of a two-car garage.
Again, Fermi's team was aiming for criticality, that point at which the pile would build a chain reaction that would continue on its own. And for safety, they used special neutron-absorbing control rods. To turn the reaction on, they pulled the rods out. To slow things down, they'd push the rods back in. The scientists spend 17 days building the pile, moving rods around, and Fermi keeps calculating when the pile will go critical.
December 2nd, 1942, dawns in Chicago, very, very cold morning.
Fermi and his team start to put the final layers of the pile into place, and they're counting the neutrons with counters that work like Geiger counters and click as they register neutrons whizzing by.
So by close to noon, they're getting a pretty steady clicking sound out of the reactor. At this point, Fermi, who is a man of great regularity, even though this is going to be the first time in the history of the world that human beings have built a nuclear reactor, Fermi says, okay, time to stop for lunch. And then they come back. It's now 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they put the last materials on the top with the control rods pushed all the way in. And then Fermi says, now we're going to remove the control rods and we should have a divergent chain reaction. And as they pull out these control rods, the reaction increases, the counter starts clicking, and it clicks faster and faster until finally it's a dull roar. Fermi is watching his other gauges and meters. And he says, the reaction is going. We have a chain reaction.
And here, Fermi and the atomic scientists got their proof that they could coax energy out of matter, and they had a path to the bomb and later to nuclear power. Rhodes tells us that Fermi let the reaction run like this for 15 minutes.
It was tense for everyone else, but Fermi was a very confident man.
When it was over, the scientists shared a bottle of Chianti in paper cups and drank in silence, aware, no doubt, of the far-reaching consequences of their actions that day. As for Mark's question about radioactivity, the reactor would only have been emitting radiation during those 15 minutes that Fermi let the reaction run on.
The amount of radioactivity was extremely small. It's faded away long ago. There really was very little risk, and I must say most of these scientists lived to ripe old ages despite their exposures to low levels of radiation in the course of their work.
Just to be sure, though, I went with the University of Chicago's radiation safety officer to a place just above the former site of Fermi's pile. A memorial is there now, and a library. We took a reading on a Geiger counter, and sure enough, it read 0.02 millirems per hour. No abnormal radioactivity.
That was Katie Mingle reporting. She now works at 99% Invisible, a podcast about architecture and design. And if you didn't hear Quinn Meyer's recent story about the secrecy surrounding Fermi's experiment, just go back a few episodes in your podcast feed or go to wbez.org/Curious City. Curious City is supported by the Conant Family Foundation. I'm Jessica Popovac.
Sometimes you just need a quick overview of the news.
Meantime, it was chaos today at the Chicago City Council.
A Chicago cop with a controversial past is running for judge.
Other times, you're looking for a deeper understanding of what's going on in the city.
Wow, that's so... No one has asked me that question.
The Rundown podcast has all of that, and it's Chicago-based, so you know what's up in your neighborhood and across town. Listen to The Rundown wherever you get your podcasts or at wbez.org/rundown.